Morning, everyone. It was real funny this morning in Sunday school. Pretty much this whole class was about what I'm going to talk about for the exhortation today. It's kind of funny how that happens sometimes, where it seems like the whole theme of the day centers around one idea. But my thoughts come out of Matthew 9 today, the daily reading. And, you know, I'm sure you've noticed it, that oftentimes when Jesus is about to heal someone, or just after he does, he tells them that it's their faith that has healed them. And I've noticed it, you know, read it many times growing up reading the Gospels, but maybe never stopped to think about it. That is one thing I love about doing the exhortation, is it forces you to stop and ask a lot of questions about what you are reading. So I asked myself that question, you know, what did he mean by that? What did Jesus mean when he told the people that he healed that it was their faith that had done the healing? Let's look at where that happens here. We just read it, but let's just refresh our memory. In Matthew 9, we'll read the account in 22. In verse 22, this is a story of the woman who was diseased with the issue of blood for 12 years. And she kind of sneaks up behind him and just touches the hem of his garment. And Jesus turns around, and in verse 22, when he saw her, he said, "Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole." And the woman was made whole from that hour. It's not the only time, because if you just skip down to verse 27 through 29, Jesus comes upon a couple blind men who would follow him around, and they cried out in verse 27, saying, "Thou son of David, have mercy on us." In verse 28, we read, "And when he was come into the house, the blind man came to him." They were persistent. "And Jesus saith unto them, Believe ye that I am able to do this? They said unto him, Yea, Lord. Then he touched their eyes, saying, According to your faith, be it unto you." So there's a couple examples right here in this chapter, and there's even a couple other healings that occur in this chapter. And it's kind of implied as well there that the faith of those people involved was great, and that Jesus took note of it. So when he says that to them, what does he mean? So in what sense has the person's faith healed them? So I start to thinking maybe there's a few different possibilities. Number one, I guess you could say that it was the placebo effect. That is, Jesus actually didn't heal the person at all. He didn't even use the Holy Spirit, because they thought they were going to be healed, therefore they were healed. That's one possibility of the meaning of the word, "your faith has made you whole," right? There's even well-documented, you know, clinical trials and many sort of cases in the medical industry of where this placebo effect seems to happen. People take medication, it's nothing but a sugar pill, and they get better. And there's something mind over matter happening there. Somehow that person feels they're going to get better, or they start feeling maybe more relaxed or more positive, or something occurs inside of them that's not really well understood that leads to them feeling better. And maybe even actually in some rare cases being cured of a very grave disease. But I don't think that's what's happening here, right? Because the gospel's pretty clear that Jesus did use the Holy Spirit power to save them. And even later on, we find out that he bestows that power on his disciples. So it's nothing that simple that's happening. Well, you could also say maybe the person's faith unlocked some ability within Jesus to heal them. So that being said, that person, if they had no faith, Jesus would have been powerless to do the healing. That's definitely another possibility of the meaning of the phrase, "your faith has made you whole." Jesus is saying, if you didn't believe, I really wouldn't be able to do anything at all. Definitely a possibility, right? At least if you just read that phrase itself. That's one way of interpreting Jesus' words. But I don't like that one either. So I guess I'm left with a third alternative of what he meant. And that is that the person's faith is what led them to seek out Jesus in the first place and to ask for healing. So in other words, I guess what I'm saying is Jesus had the power to heal them whether they wanted it or not, whether they believed it or not. He could have done that. He had God's Holy Spirit power. And he wasn't limited in any sense by the person, but he only was presented with that opportunity in that moment of time because the person's faith put them in direct contact with Christ. So if they didn't believe Jesus could do anything for them, they wouldn't have sought him out at all. And you can say that there are many people probably like that with during Jesus' ministry, with really severe problems, be it spiritual or physical, and they just didn't have any faith that Jesus could do anything, so guess what? They didn't bother asking. So you can contrast that with the attitude of the Pharisees here in the same chapter, Matthew 9, if you take a look at verses 10 through 13. And I think they're even one more case of severity on the scale of lacking faith, because with the Pharisees, it's not just that they didn't believe Jesus could heal them. They didn't even think they needed to be healed of anything. Let's take a look at that in Matthew 9 and coming in at verse 10. "And it came to pass, as Jesus sat at meat in the house, behold, many publicans and sinners came and sat down with him and his disciples. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said unto his disciples, Why eateth your master with publicans and sinners? But when Jesus heard that, he said unto them, They that be whole need not a physician, but they that are sick. But go ye and learn what that meaneth, I will have mercy and not sacrifice. For I am not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." And so there they were criticizing him for interacting with these people who were in desperate need of help and healing. And the sad thing is, they should have been there too, because they had that same need, only they didn't see that. They didn't see it that way. And I used to read this chapter and said, well, he must be referring to these Pharisees as the righteous, that he's not calling. And I think he was maybe being a little facetious there, because that's the way certainly they saw themselves as the spiritual leaders of Israel, but not the way he saw them, I'm sure. So they were maybe self-righteous, but not righteous. And yet the sad thing is they just didn't see it. They didn't see really that Jesus had any, not just that he had, didn't have the power or the ability, but that there was really nothing that they needed from him in terms of healing. It was even one more sort of step in the wrong direction, I would say, as far as their attitude went. So going back to these people that he was able to heal then, you know, we answered the question, rather, what does this statement mean? I think it just means that Jesus is commenting on the fact that their faith played a big part in bringing them to him. But now I would ask the question, why does he say it? And again, there's a couple different ideas. So Jesus is informing them, and obviously anyone within earshot, that their faith has healed them. So he may have said this because he wanted to avoid the press, so to speak. And you could support that by looking in Matthew 9 at verse 30. After he heals the blind men, he comes right out and says, just don't tell anybody about this. See that no man know it. And the assumption there is that he wants to avoid the sort of throng that would certainly have followed these people going about, as it actually happened in verse 31. They did that. They went around and told everybody that they saw. So that's one reason. Maybe he's saying it's your faith that's healed you, to try to take the attention off himself so he doesn't find himself in a huge multitude of people. Or maybe it's because he's just a really, really humble person and he doesn't want to take credit. He'd rather give them the credit. But I don't think that's what it is either. I don't think he was trying to deflect praise from himself or attention from himself. As much as I just think he was amazed by their faith. And I think that he was just elated at what he saw in these people that were coming to him. You know, he interacted with a lot of people that not only didn't have faith in him, but thought very poorly of him and therefore of God. But to see these people coming unto him and, you know, asking for help and believing that he can do it, I think was something that just really gave him a lot of strength and courage. Because in chapter 9, verse 2, skipping back to the beginning of this chapter, you know, I kind of read in maybe a little bit between the lines, but it says in verse 2, these people came unto him bearing this sick man. And Jesus, in verse 2, seeing their faith, said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, be of good cheer, thy sins be forgiven thee. In other words, it's something that he took note of. It's something that he was aware of in these people that were coming unto him, that they had great faith. And therefore, because he noticed it, he said it. He commented on it. He was letting everyone know. And really more, like I said, I think just because that was something that he really took special note of. It was meaningful to him. And beyond that, in terms of why he said this to them, I think he was trying to teach that person and the people around something in that moment. He was taking the opportunity to call out, if you will, the faith of those individuals that were coming unto him. Because at the end of the day, Jesus knew that the mental or spiritual transformation that happened inside these people, to take them from a state of disbelief to a state of belief in Jesus and what he could do, was way more important than the transformation that was about to happen in terms of their physical healing. Because in the physical change only improves the quality of your life in the here and now, your mortal life. But the spiritual change is what can lead to eternal life. And really, I think that's what conversion is, right? To me, that's what, if you're converted, people say, I was converted, or I went through a process of conversion. That's what that is. It's starting off and saying, I don't believe that, whatever it may be. And then at the end of the day, saying, I do believe that. It's that change that happens there internally. And it may happen for some people, I guess, in a moment or an instant due to some occurrence in their life that just causes their eyes to be opened in terms of their faith. And I think more typically, though, at least I can say for me personally, it's more of a gradual change, a gradual conversion, not something that just hits me like that. But I slowly kind of convert from not believing to believing. And it's something that it's a journey that I'm on. And I want to dive a little bit into that process here as well in the talk of changing yourself and internally being changed, rather, from a state of I don't believe to a state of saying I do believe. So why did he say that? I think he was really making note of what was the most important thing that was happening at that moment was not this person being opened their eyes from being blind to being able to see, but rather from not believing to believing. Much, much more important to Jesus, at the end of the day, to the person as well that had come unto him. I think that's important to remember because, you know, for ourselves, we think a lot about the things around us, the problems we're in, or the discomforts we have, whether it be discomforts of the flesh or maybe something related to our quality of living or who knows what we perceive to be a troubling thing that we're going through. And those are the things that are important to us. But as came out in the class this morning, it's the character building that is more important to God as we go through those things. And we may ask for relief from some ailment, but what's more important is that we would ask God for the relief from that ailment. That is what really is the most powerful change that would happen, regardless of if the ailment goes away or not. So let me ask another question then. What if the person didn't believe that Jesus could save them? And that's a little bit of an oxymoron, right? Because why would they be there in the first place asking him? But I think we see some people somewhere along that conversion path here. And let's take a look back in Matthew 8. So in other words, some people who had elements of belief and disbelief at the same time. And so they're conflicted in a sense. And there's a few instances of this in the Gospels I want to take a look at because these are the people that I really identify with. You know, I don't so much identify with the blind men who are just certain that Jesus can save them. I more sympathize here with the disciples in Matthew 8 and verse 24. Let's read this little account where the disciples are on the sea together on a boat with Jesus on the boat. In verse 24, behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves. But he, being Jesus, was asleep. And his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us. we perish. And he saith unto them, why are ye fearful, O ye of little faith? Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? So we see the disciples in this instance asking Jesus to save them, but at the same time being very, very afraid. And I think it's the fear that is what gives away this conflict in them. So they don't really 100% believe that Jesus can save them. They ask almost in desperation. And what does Jesus do? Does he require them to have perfect faith? No, he performs the miracle anyway. He calms the seas. But then he follows it up with a moment of teaching, and he tells them, why are you afraid? And I used to think it was sort of an insult that he said to them, oh, ye of little faith. But you know, sometimes I wish I was the person that had just a little bit of faith. I don't think it's so much a condemnation of them as much as it is him saying, you had enough faith to come and ask, but I saw the fear in your eyes when you asked. And that's what he wanted to change in them. Because fear, the fear that they had, they thought they were going to die, right? Some of you may have been in instances, whether it's on the sea or otherwise, but where you really did fear for your life. Or maybe you just fear something in life, whatever it may be. But that fear is not the root problem. Because fear is just a symptom of the measure of the lack of faith within us. Because as Josh mentioned in the class this morning, the mind of faith, there is no room for fear. There's nothing to be afraid of. At the end of the day, there's nothing that can make you afraid. But yet we are. Yet we do get afraid. You know, when we almost get hit in a car accident or something almost happens to someone we love, there's this fear within us because there isn't that perfect faith yet as we grow and mature. And same thing with the disciples here. You know, a case anyway where Jesus performed a miracle and saved people, their mortal life anyway, in a case where they didn't really fully believe that he could do it. Now, if they had no faith, they wouldn't have asked, and they would have continued to try to get themselves out of their predicament and their situation. And sometimes that's, you know, perfectly honestly, that's what I do. I don't even think to ask. It's not that I don't have faith, I just really don't think about it. It doesn't occur to me that I can turn to God or Christ for help. Let's look at another case that's, I find a really emotional account in Mark. We'll switch over a gospel record. It also occurs in Matthew, but I really like the way it's described in Mark chapter 9. It's funny, a lot of times we see people asking Jesus not for themselves to be healed or saved, but for someone else that they know or love to be healed or saved. And this is one of those instances in Mark chapter 9 and down in verse 17. And the context here is Jesus is just coming off the mountain of transfiguration. So Mark 9, verse 17. And one of the multitude answered and said, Master, I have brought unto thee my son, which hath a dumb spirit. And wheresoever he taketh him, he teareth him, and he foameth and gnasheth with his teeth and pineth away. And I spake to thy disciples and that they should cast him out, and they could not. And he answered him and said, O faithless generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I suffer you? Bring him unto me. And they brought him unto him. And when he saw him, straightway the spirit tare him, and he fell on the ground and wallowed, foaming. And he asked his father, how long is it ago since this came unto him? And he said, of a child. And oft times it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Jesus said unto him, if thou canst believe, all things are possible to him that believeth. And straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe. help thou my unbelief. And Jesus saw that the people came running together. He rebuked the foul spirit, saying unto him, Thou dumb and deaf spirit, I charge thee, come out of him, and enter no more into him. So here's this father with this desperate act of just asking Jesus, save my son. And Jesus says, do you believe that I can do that? And he admits there's this element of him that does believe. He says, Lord, I do believe. But right on the heels of that statement is an admission. I need you to help the part of me that does not believe, because it's there. He admits it. Because look at the way he asked Jesus. If you can do anything, you know, there's that element of doubt in him. If there's anything you can do, I don't know if you can or not, he seems to be saying. But if you can do anything, please help us. There's not that firm faith like the centurion that says, if you just say it, that's all I need you to just say it. Just say the words, Jesus, and I'll turn around and go back home. He doesn't show that level of belief and faith in what Jesus can do. And this internal conflict, I think, in this really, passionate moment, really dramatic moment in this man's life, is something that, on a passionate level, I can sympathize with. You know, I don't know what he's going through there in his specific case, but what I can say is, reading his words, that I can identify with that. Lord, I believe, but help my unbelief, because there's this dual nature in me. One part of me really wants to believe, does believe, in fact, that God can do anything. And this other part of me is the skeptic, the part of me that's not so sure, I would say, about it. And so I see this as really applying to me anyway. But it's so critical, because I think that, you know, the passage that Russ read for us this morning out of James, let's turn it up. Because God does want us to have a strong faith in him. So James chapter 1. He wants us to really believe that he can do it. That's what he's looking for. You know, we may be looking for relief from an ailment. He's looking for us to believe that he can do something about it. That's what God really wants. James chapter 1 and verse 5. James 1, verse 5. If any of you lack wisdom, let him ask of God, that giveth to all men liberally, and upbraideth not, and it shall be given him. But let him ask in faith, nothing wavering. For he that wavereth is like a wave of the sea, driven with the wind and tossed. For let not that man think that he shall receive anything of the Lord. A double-minded man is unstable in all his ways. And this account always reminds me of, you know, Peter. I think maybe it's something about this imagery that James uses in verse 6 about, being tossed about by the waves. And this sort of being double-minded, right? Because that's what Peter did, right? When he stepped out onto the sea to walk unto Jesus when they were in this huge storm, he had incredible faith to step out of the boat. Oftentimes, I think we're critical of Peter that he started to sink. But how many of us would have stepped out of the boat in the first place? And so there he is, seeing Jesus and walking unto him, believing clearly that if he just steps out of the boat, he's not going to be harmed. He won't drown. An incredible act of faith. And yet, for some reason, he can't sustain it. For some reason, he takes a few steps away from the boat, and then he starts to see how bad it really is from the perspective of the sea. And then he starts to sink. And there's that double-mindedness, I think, that I can identify with. You know, on the one hand, I wish I had the part of him that's able to step out of the boat in that level of faith. And then yet, you know, it's not so much that when he started sinking, right? So Peter's sinking, and there's Jesus standing on the sea. If you had paused the movie right there and gone up to Peter, if it were a movie, if there were a movie about his life, and said, Peter, do you think that Jesus can save you? He would have stopped and he would have probably said, well, yeah, I believe Jesus has the power to do it. So it's not that intellectually he thought to himself, there's nothing Jesus can do about this. I'm in this huge, middle of this huge storm and I'm going to sink. It's not so much that. It's more that, you know, he paid more attention, if you will, to the waves. And that started to concern him And then his fear took over. It was more of an emotional thing than an intellectual thing. It's not that he didn't think Jesus could do anything. It's that his fears started to, that instinctive self-preservation started to tell him something, and that is that you're in trouble, regardless of what in his head and in his heart he believed Jesus could do about the situation. So to repeat that, I don't think Peter all of a sudden stopped believing that Jesus could keep him afloat. It's more that he paid more attention to the waves than anything else, including the master. And that, at least, is what I see in my life. It's not that if I'm in the middle of some crisis and you know, clearly I'm not thinking about God or asking anything of him. If you were to grab me by the shoulder and say, Ben, do you think God can do something about this? I would say, well, yeah, probably. And the reason I'm not on my knees is not because I don't think God has the power. It's that I totally missed it. I'm just more concerned about doing things myself or fixing it myself. I'm paying more attention to the waves in my life. And so then I see that we really play an important role in our healing or our salvation, if you will. You know, it's not a popular notion in a lot of sort of modern-day Christian circles to think that we have something to do with our salvation. But clearly here, you know, in the case of these people in the Gospels, they played a role in their being saved. They came to, first of all, what? They had to think there was something wrong. Second, they had to think that God or Jesus could do something about it in their case. And third, they had to have the faith to go forward with it. So there is something that God's asking for us. It's not so much that we have to jump through some kind of a hoop or, you know, obey the law to some level of perfection like the Jews believed in the day of Christ, but rather that we have to have enough faith to realize that we have a problem that God can do something about, and then to take the next step and to allow him to help us. And that's the role we play, willing participants in our own healing. You know, the example of Abraham, he was a willing participant in the salvation that was brought upon all mankind. He did the incredible act of faith of picking up his family and going out, you know, and probably what seemed like a real irresponsible thing from a lot of people in that day and age, and walking out into the desert, you know, into the wilderness, because God had asked him to. So there's the example for us. And, you know, I want to just, before we close here, I was asked one time by someone, do you think you're going to be in the kingdom? And I was about, I think, 15 or 16 in CYC. And, you know, I said, well, I don't think so. I got a lot of things I got to work on. And the look on that person's face to me, I'll never forget, they said, you have to believe that you're going to be in the kingdom. You have to believe that. And it really sort of took me aback. The person was younger than me. I didn't really, you know, expect that kind of almost rebuke, really, is what it was, to be honest. And it struck me. I mean, I thought to myself afterward, that's so true. I mean, we have to believe that we're going to be in the kingdom. Not because I'm so great or because I can pull it off or because I'm just a good guy, but because the great mercy of the one who died for us can get us there. But to think that I won't be in the kingdom is to say that God is not capable of saving me. And that, I think, is something that was really powerful to me, you know, saying, you know, you really have to believe that you're going to be in the kingdom. So ask yourself that. You know, we have a lot of negative self-talk sometimes, and we say, I'm just not good enough, or I'm not worthy. And yeah, there's things about who we are and the way we live that we need to work on, but, you know, we have to see ourselves there. We have to have that belief, that faith that we'll be in the kingdom. Because in a certain sense, you know, whether you think you'll be there or whether you think you won't be there, you're right. And so now we have the emblems in front of us here, and Christ offers us healing through the emblems. And, you know, back into just real quick Matthew 9, it struck me again here that, you know, out of the four healings that occur in Matthew 9, three of them involve Jesus physically touching the person. And that is what we have here today. We touch the bread. We touch the cup of wine. And in a sense, we need to see that that is a physical contact with Christ. And we're here. Our faith has brought us here, that it matters to be here, that there's something valuable and invaluable, actually, in being here. And that is what has brought us into contact with Christ now again this morning, the first Sunday of the new year. So ask yourself today, if your faith is weak, let your prayer be the prayer of the Father of the sick son. Lord, I believe. Help thou my unbelief. And if your faith today is strong, then ask in faith for the healing that will surely come.